And this is the HR Power Hour, and we are talking to Susan Dench. She's the author of the book, The Responsibility Rules. And you got to be on Fox and Friends and talk to them, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, thanks to my husband. I was really lucky. I love Fox and Friends. We watch it every morning. And I hadn't had any luck contacting anybody. And one day we were watching, and Gretchen was mentioning the accountability and responsibility she held her children to. And my husband said, you know, you should really contact her. I think she'd like to have you on the show. So I took a stab at what her email address was. And within an hour, I got a response from her saying, I love this subject. Let's talk to my producer. And within a week or so, I was on the show, and it was lots of fun. I had a great response, and it just got the ball rolling.
Well, Susan, thank you for being on the show. You are
thanks for having me.
Owner of Muddy Dog Media, is that
I
correct?
I am. That's right.
That's great. And you have a new book coming out. We're going to talk a lot about this, but what's the name of the new book coming out? When is it supposed to come out?
The new book is called Generation Soup, The Recipe for Cooking Up Innovation, Loyalty, and Growth in the Generational Melting Pot. It's actually part of a series of books. The Responsibility Rules was the appetizer. Each other book is a main course. And the books will all talk about responsibility in different areas of our lives. So the government, in this case the workplace, schools, individuals, and families. Because we really see personal responsibility or lack of personal responsibility in every part of our life. It's just such a hot topic. Whenever I speak, I always see everybody nodding up and down, you know, in the audience and so on. Everyone has a story about how this affects them. So I thought we'd do is not just, you know, not just have an initial conversation on responsibility, but also how personal responsibility affects us in all areas of our lives.
Personal responsibility. So let's talk about that for a second. Certainly, it's the buzzword, no question out there today. And there's a question of, you know, who's responsible, the employer or the employee, or what the balancing act between the two is. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about in the workplace, because we'll start there. Tell me a little about how you think the perception is out there from employers and employees, and how you aim to change that.
Well, I think that most employers would tell you that, you know, they've got a motivated workforce and they're all innovative and they've got employee loyalty and so on, and that's how they're seeing growth. But I can tell you in the work that I've done with working with companies in a consulting capacity, that a lot of what I see is there's a lot of blaming going on between the departments that you see as a consultant that you might not see if you're that close to the situation. But you see a lot of people making excuses as to why their work couldn't be done. Well, I didn't get their report done because I didn't have the numbers from another division coming in instead of going over and being proactive about it. So you see a lot of these sort of things happening in the workplace, and I think there's sort of a denial about that going on, because one of the things that I'm positing in the Generation Soup is that we have a lot of we have four different generations now that are coming into the workforce. So we have the older, you know, the World War II generation, which is still the silent generation. We have baby boomers who are, you know, this huge bolus of people were born and we're still in the workforce. We have Gen X, which is relatively small, and then we've got Gen Y, which is a relatively big demographic. And as they come into the workforce, of course, we've all got different ways of working and different ways of doing everything. So what I'm saying is that we've got some issues here, and there's a common ground that we can all work together if we practice personal responsibility in the workplace, because it really provides a framework for all generations, all the things that they want to get out of working. It provides a framework for that. And so I think what we see is I'm asking people to really make three commitments. The first commitment is from a leadership standpoint, to realize that everything starts at the top. If you've got the cultural aspects of a corporation, the vision and so on, all that really comes from the top, and everybody looks to the president, the CEO on down to see what's going on up there. And they want to know how they fit into that structure and what makes their work important and how are they part of something bigger than themselves. The second commitment that I'm asking people to make is a commitment to making people a core responsibility. One of the things that we all want is growth, learning, those opportunities. And I think we find that when those things happen, we find that we innovate, that we're motivated, that we want to come into work and we want to work with our team. So I think if you can make a commitment to making people a core commitment, and that means, you know, frequent feedback as far as, you know, how are you doing? So people know they get that feedback, so they know, are they doing something right or wrong? And then the third commitment is the acceptance and expectation of personal responsibility. So if something goes wrong, we have, you know, the road is littered with CEOs that make, you know, they blame people for what happened before them and so on. It's not my fault. You know, we've got that in our administration, unfortunately. No, it was President Bush's fault. Well, at some stage of the game, the buck has to stop here, and responsibility has to start at the top. And so I think if we have that expectation of everyone taking personal responsibility for their actions, we really lay out a path for innovation to be ignited in the organization, employee loyalty, and then ultimately growth.
When we're talking about employers setting that tone in the organization, tell me about some of the steps they might take to really ensure that employees understand that there is a line that has to be drawn, and that this is your responsibility, these are our responsibilities. How do you set that example? Certainly, we know that with handbooks, you know, you set policies, with procedures, you set accountability. But how do you draw the line as to whose responsibility it is from that level, of that personal responsibility level?
Well, I think, again, everything comes from the top, and it's got to be part of your culture. So if part of your culture is that, you know, the buck stops with me, and everyone has that, that is not just talked about, it's lived. If you have got to see that from a CEO perspective, if you see that the CEO is taking on responsibility, if you have a bad quarter and the CEO says, well, you know what, I really messed up on that strategy, that wasn't so great, then can say, well, you know, it's okay to fail, but I've got to have, you know, I'm taking rational risk, but I'm not being fired for that. So it's okay for me to take that risk, but it's also okay that, you know, I'm taking responsibility for something that didn't work. But I think, again, that really has to come from the top, and it has to be cultural. That has to be built into the DNA of every company, knowing that they are responsible. And if they work hard, they're going to be rewarded for it as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We had a couple weeks ago, Anne Rhodes on, and she talks about culture and building a culture in an organization, national speaker. And I think next week we have Don McPherson coming on from Modern Survey to talk about employee engagement, how to measure it. So, you know, this is really about somebody's personal responsibility, somebody internally. I guess my first question is, how did you stumble onto this? How did you suddenly decide to talk about it?
Well, I think I've talked about it a lot. We've talked about it within our family and so on, but actually this happened a couple of years ago. We had a situation at our house where we were gone, and a friend of our daughter's came over and was pet-sitting for us. And our daughter knew about it, so she was culpable, but she was with us. But we came back, and there had been an underage drinking party at our house while we were gone. So we called the police, and the police knew every single kid on that list. They knew not just the kid. They knew exactly the street address where they lived and the parents, which means they had been doing this over and over again. And so it took a couple of weeks. Out of the 20 kids that were there, I called all the parents, and I only had two parents that said, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe my kid was there. They'll be right over to apologize. And the other 18, I got responses from, well, so what? They were only there for 20 minutes. And one guy was screaming at me so loudly on the phone, I actually had to hold it away from my ear. So I got really upset and started writing a letter about personal responsibility to our youngest daughter. And a couple of weeks later, she had a couple of situations with entitlement on her soccer team where the helicopter parents swooped in to make things happen. And so, again, you know, the coaches weren't backed up. They quit, and they weren't backed up by the school, unfortunately, and I got really upset then, and I just said, you know, this is the next generation coming out. If I don't do something, who's going to do something? And that's when I really got mad and decided to start talking about it, and that's when I wrote the book.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it takes a moment, doesn't it?
Yes,
just
it does.
Something that triggers that reaction. And certainly that's something that I think more parents and more people should be involved with. We are talking to Susan Dent. She's the author of the book, The Responsibility Rules. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the generations, the different generations in the workplace. And the first segment, we talked about older generations. Jerry LaBelle was on, a nurse practitioner for Workmen at St. Mary's Hospital. And he was talking about the aging workforce. And that generation is still there. I mean, they're still going. And you talked a little bit during the break about your dad. Tell that story, if you would, and then we'll continue with the generational conversation.
Sure. My dad is 81, and he just retired as an engineer from GE. And he started there, you know, years and years and years ago. And you think about all the changes he's seen with technology and so on. And sometimes he tells me, you know, Susan, you got to keep up with the times. So, but he finally got to the point where he's, you know, he retired years ago, and they had a brain drain. They lost so many people through attrition and so on in retirements that they called calls a lot of retirees back, and he loves it. You know, he's been going in for probably 15 years now, and he chooses which projects he'd like to work on. He comes in and out as he pleases, and so on, and just really, really enjoys it, because that's really, you know, he's an inventor at heart. He has a lot of patents and so on, but he finally got to the point where the politics just really got him this year, and they had a new system that they implemented, and he just said, I don't want to do it anymore, and so he's left. But he, you know, 81, and one of actually his biggest joys has been that when they have co-op students come in, I went to Northeastern and I was a co-op student also, but when they have co-ops and interns come in, he loves sharing the information and the knowledge that he has. And that's one of the issues that I think we've got to be very cognizant of, that if we don't find a way for baby boomers to work with the Gen Y workers coming in, there are a lot of products that we have out there that are either heritage products or they have a long lead time and so on. So for instance, he worked with large steam turbines. I mean, that's heavy engineering stuff. And it's really, that is a heritage product, because there are a lot of tips and shortcuts and so on that the older generation can show the younger generation. But if we we experience turnover because we don't, Gen Y comes in and they're not happy with the way the workforce or the work environment is at a certain place, then they're going to leave. And then you've got the seniors that are going to leave, and now we've got a big problem. So I think it's just so important for us to really realize this is an issue. It's coming up soon. They're saying now that by 2025, 75% of all workers in the workforce are going to be Gen Y. That's really an important demographic for us to make sure that we're keeping them satisfied and motivated at work.
No, you're right. And we're talking with Susan Dench, and she is the owner, president of Money.
All of the above, yeah.
Media. Yes, all of the above. Yeah. Chief cook, bottle washer.
Exactly.
Of Money Dog Media. You know, you're absolutely correct. And certainly we've talked about the generations. You know, it's interesting. We have seen that there is, if a organization can set up a good mentoring program between Gen Y and the greatest generation and or the baby boom generation, you can really have some incredible success. You know, it's interesting. I did have, as we have talked about, I do speaking on generational differences. And one of the things is that Gen Xers sometimes come up to me afterwards and go, well, what about me?
Yes.
You know, because it's almost a little bit from their perspective, the lost generation.
Yeah.
And it's really not that at all. It's just the fact that the size of the generation is a lot smaller than the size of the other two. And so Gen Y is the up-and-coming generation, and they are technologically advanced, and that's where we're moving to, technology. And they have become such a key element to this this new technological future that we have. And so from your aspect, you're absolutely correct. We do need to merge those two to get more information to Gen Y so they can run the place.
Well, not only that, you're talking about flexibility or technology, but technology actually provides flexibility. And one of the things that we're used to is you go into an office, you're there from 8 to 5, and that's where you are. And working at home, you know, I've had situations where I've been able to have, you know, work at home situations, and that was great. But you don't always have that, and companies don't always feel comfortable with that sort of thing. But, you know, how many times have you gone in to get your teenager out of bed and they're, you know, asleep with a phone under the pillow, or you get texts at all hours of the day and night? I mean, that's just how they work. They are turned on, plugged in, tuned in, you know, 24 hours a day, and that's how they want to work. For them, where we used to, you know, we've worked because we have a living and we need to, you know, support a house and all that sort of stuff. They don't really look at work the same way. For them, it's a means to have a lifestyle. And they're also the first generation that's coming in where the norm is a dual earning household. So you're going to start having all those roles that are going to be negotiated and so on. So men and women are going to start negotiating the parental roles and you know, who's going to be doing what, their roles and responsibilities, which means you have to have a flexible workplace. And flexible workplace, that's exactly what technology is all about. You can work anywhere, anytime. And a lot of these, a lot of things that I'm seeing is that people are really bristling against being in an office. They don't understand why they have to be in the office. If I can work on a weekend, why don't you just say, here's your project, let me go and measure me on how well I do getting that project done. And I think that's really become a big issue as well. And that's something that, you know, we always come in and we say, you know, Gen Y, boy, they are entitled, they're job hoppers, they want praise all the time and so on. But you can really turn those things around and say, you know what, they're technologically astute, they're open to new ways of doing things, they have a lot of strengths that they can bring to the workforce if we can just get past our prejudices and look and see how we can work. work together.
Well, I think it is incumbent upon organizations to understand the those dynamics. I mean, part of the key area here is that there are differences. And if you at least acknowledge there are differences, and then you will prevent the conflict that will occur between the generations, which is nothing more than a misunderstanding of what the cultural norm is. You know, I always kid, but I talk about the fact the first time I ever tried to explain to my grandmother, God bless her, rest her soul, about a fax, and trying to explain that a piece of paper went into a machine and another piece of paper somewhere else came out with with the information on it. And I could have explained it till I was blue in the face, and she would have just nodded and go, that's nice, dear. Right? I mean, that's the reality. It's just, there's a conceptual understanding. It just wasn't going to happen. And so how we communicate between the generations and making them understand that it's okay is key.
Well, and I agree with that. And I think also there, as you know, we talked about personal responsibility and a culture of accountability within an organization. Is they want their work to count. They want their work to matter. And they want to be, it's not that they're lazy. They want to show up. They want to do the work. They want to work hard. But they also want to be rewarded for that. And I think a lot of them see a lot of what their parents went through as drudgery, if you will, that they went to work and it was drudgery. They didn't want to go to work. They want to come in. They want to be passionate and they want to be engaged. We have a 22-year-old who goes to art school, and she's very ambitious about what she wants to do. And it's been really interesting listening to her through some of her internships, what she's looking for in a company when she graduates and so on. She wants to be engaged. She wants to do a really good job. She wants to work hard. She doesn't mind putting in the hours, but it's got to be work that matters to her. And isn't that what we really all want? So if we can create an environment in the workplace where we're all doing something that we want, it benefits everybody. And I think, you know, again, I think we also have to, you talked about mentoring opportunities. I think those are important. One of the best lessons I ever learned was when I worked for HP in the medical products division. I sat in engineering. Luckily, coming from a family of engineers, that wasn't too traumatic for me as a marketing person, but it could have been. But one of the engineers came in from MIT, and he had an undergraduate and a graduate degree from there. And when he came in, he was so astute that the first thing he did was seek out an older mentor, because he said, you know, I have all this book smarts, but I have no street smarts. And I thought that was the greatest lesson.
Right.
Here's this kid who's 25, 26 years old, and it was the first thing he did when he got there. And I think that's just so, you know, we talked about this a bit before, but I think that's really important. But I think it's also important that you have to match up the right mentor with the right person, or I think it can really backfire. You got to be careful.
No, there are personalities that play into this. And I think one of the other things that's interesting, and we've seen this on the career transition side of our business, is that some people frown at different types of jobs. Mm. It's interesting, you talked a little bit a few seconds ago about work that matters. Well, some things just need to be done even if it isn't the fact that it's work that matters.
That's why they call it work.
That's why they call it work. That's why they don't call it play.
Yeah.
But there is this perception at times that I want to do something, younger generation may say, though I have heard it even in other generations, I want to do something that matters. Well, you're skilled to do something that is work. And so there is a little bit of the disconnect between the goal, mm-hmm. Your aspirational goal, and what you maybe did in school, or what you really decided to take in college, or what you really learned in life. And it doesn't necessarily connect. And so that sometimes causes a problem in terms of your attitude, your engagement, you're willing to do what you have to do versus mm-hmm. what you want to do. And so that does take a challenge. How do you think that plays into some of the things that you've seen from your research?
Well, actually, one of the things I think that we have, helicopter parents have a lot to answer for, because helicopter parents at home become helicopter managers in the workplace. And I think one of the things that we've really done a poor job of in the kids that are coming through now is we don't let them fail. And you, to be successful and to be a responsible adult, you've got to let a kid fail, because, you know, you think about a 2 or 3 year old, everything they want to do, I want to do it myself, leave me alone, I want to do it by myself. And by the time they're, you know, 18, 19, 20 and beyond, if the parent keeps picking them up and doing those things for them, they don't want to do it anymore. And I think that's some of what you see in the workplace. I mean, that was never for us. It's like, you know, your room is filthy, go pick it up. You know, now it's like, oh, well, don't worry, I'll take care of it for you, just go out and play sports or whatnot. We coddle our children. We tell them how wonderful they are, even when they're not wonderful. We have a lower bar for them. We need to make sure that we keep the bar high so there's something for them to aspire to. That's how they become mature, responsible adults. So I think really a lot of that sort of thing that, you know, here's the drudgery of work, the things that you don't want to do, I think a lot of that starts in the home, and it starts really early in the home with parents expecting, having certain expectations of their children and making sure those expectations are met.
Well, that falls right into the workplace with supervisors who are not willing to tell employees how they really work, not really willing to do the performance appraisals and evaluations that are necessary, or afraid to tell them that they're not doing a good job, are afraid to not necessarily speak up and say, hey, you know, you're not doing it right. I'll just fix it after you're done. It's not exactly how to make it. I mean, productivity goes down, profitability goes down, all the things that go with it. And that is a natural extension of what they're learning at home.
And I couldn't agree more with you. And one of the things that you just said also was, picking up for them afterwards and so on, and having that honest conversation. And one of the things that I, one of the bullet points that I have underneath the making people a core competency is having honest communications with your employees. Because it's not doing anybody any favors if you're keeping a person in a job, which they somehow know, you know, they know in their heart that this is not the right job for them. So you're not doing anyone any favors by keeping them in that position. And they're not growing as a person. They're not growing as a professional. So the best thing and the kindest thing you can really do to them is either find another position for them that takes care, that takes advantage of their skill sets, or set them free so they can do something else that works for them.
Now, I've talked with supervisors that, you know, we've gone through this conversation of either coaching or some process, and they've had to go out and make that tough conversation, have that tough conversation. Afterwards, they come back and go, geez, the employee wasn't surprised at all.
They never are.
And a matter of fact, we had one that said the employee actually said, well, it's about time.
Wow.
And, you know, they really would just, you know, like finally someone's made the decision to tell me what I already know. But I'll coast along. I'll do what I need to do. And it doesn't help anybody in that process.
It doesn't. And in fact, so I think that's important. And I think there's something else that's really important also, and that's the importance of saying you're sorry. If something happens that goes wrong and you need to make an apology, whether that's a public apology for, you know, the something that's gone, that's happened in your company, or there was an indiscretion or something that happened, or, so you know, bad financial result or whatever it was, I think it's incumbent upon whoever is responsible for that to be able to have the courage to say, I'm sorry, and not sweep that under the rug. Because that really goes all hand in hand with having an ethical environment, an environment in which you know that honesty, integrity are valued. So those are all kind of honest conversations that you have to have, but they're very tough to have. But this is one thing about personal responsibility. It's not for sissies. You have to be courageous to have personal responsibility, to have integrity. You have got to be a very courageous person. It takes a big person to stand up and do a lot of these things, and that's why I think a lot of people shy away from it. But it is not for sissies. This is not for, you know, this is for people that really have courage and they want to put in the work to have a life well lived.
Well, this has been a great conversation. Your book, The Responsibility Rules, that's currently out there in the marketplace. People can buy it where?
Amazon.
Of course, Amazon. Where else would it be? Amazon.com. If they want to get in touch with you directly, they should go to?
Actually, the best place to reach me is on SusanDench.com. And Susan Dench as in Judy Dench. So it's SusanDench.com, or they can email me at Susan@SusanDench.com.
Wait, you know that? Pretty easy.
Yeah, it
actually
is.
Pretty darn
easier.
Easy to do that. No, that's great. And you're hoping that the book will be out later this year, so I'm excited to hear about that. And what's the title?
The title is Generation Soup, the recipe for cooking up innovation, loyalty, and growth in the generational melting pot.
That's awesome. Looking forward to seeing it, hearing all about it. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, David.
And now the HR tip of the week. Did you know that many provisions of the Affordable Care Act go into effect in 2014? One of the things that affects you right now is the look-back period when it comes to health care. That starts January 2013. What you do now does make a difference. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to bring back Don McPherson, president of Modern Survey. He's going to be talking about peak performance through engaged employees. What are the best practices for measuring employee engagement? And how can engaged employees really make a difference in your organization? He's also going to rate HR and how well they're doing. He's got the survey data to back it up. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.